Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Thursday, March 21st. We're going to start today on a crisis situation that's a real crisis situation that we haven't dealt with yet on the show because of so much else that's been going on locally and globally. But we know this is relevant to many of you, and it's the crisis in Haiti, where a gang uprising has successfully ousted the appointed prime minister, Ariel Henry. With so many Haitian Americans in our listening area, we want your take and on why and what to do about it. And we'll talk to Gary Pierre-Pierre from the Haitian Times in just a second. But by way of background, for those of you who don't have ties to Haiti and haven't been following it, but hear this in the news and think, yeah, well, this is basically right off our shores. We should know what's going on. And the United States is often said to be somewhat responsible for this. As of now, Haitian civilians face widespread acts of random violence and displacement. According to UNICEF, over 362,000 desperate people are internally displaced, and hunger and life-threatening malnutrition are at a record high across the country. Here in the United States, Florida officials announced the interdiction of a boat carrying 25 Haitian migrants, interdiction by law enforcement last week. Florida's governor and former Republican presidential candidate Ron DeSantis threatened to fly Haitian asylum seekers. Where else? Not New York this time, the other place, Martha's Vineyard. Although CBS News reports turmoil in that country has not resulted in a spike in maritime migration, DeSantis's reaction was to just 25 people. President Biden has requested aid be sent to Haiti, but congressional Republicans blocked the flow of $40 million, citing fears that the funds could worsen the situation. A lot of Haitians also think U.S. intervention has worsened the situation there over time. So let's take a closer look at this crisis unfolding in Haiti and with ramifications for the United States. Also, the role of the United States in creating this pressure cooker. And we'll talk about how this could possibly end and get better. Joining us now is Gary Pierre-Pierre, founder and publisher of The Haitian Times. Gary, always good to have you on the show. Unfortunately, always seems to be around this kind of thing, but welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Ryan. Pleasure to be here.
And Gary, first, it might seem to Haitians and certainly to non-Haitians who casually consume media coverage that it's just one crisis after another. Today it's this. In 2021, you were on after the assassination of Prime Minister Moïse. We could go way back to the coup against President Aristide, who actually came on the show when he was in exile. Why is there so much political instability for decades in a row?
Brian, one slight correction. Moïse was the president, not the prime minister. I just wanted to make
fair
that
enough.
Point.
Sorry.
Oh, no worries. Really, Brian, I've been talking to you and other colleagues for over 20 years about Haiti. And whenever we talk about the latest crisis, I think one has to go back to when Haiti got its independence in 1804, because this was a country that was calling itself a republic, black people calling themselves freedmen. And so, you know, the United States, where slavery was a major part of its economy, really was threatened by this whole idea of Haiti. France, which was a superpower at the time, lost all of its property, and it forced Haiti to pay a ransom for having its independence. And so Haiti was isolated right there and there. It had no trading partners, and there was infighting and instability started from then. And so this is why some Haitians and some other scholars have said, well, the U.S. and France was responsible. And that cycle, unfortunately, has been continuing and unable to break. And this is where we are right now. I mean, I could talk to you if you go back to Aristide and today. The underlying reason is that we got our independence as a nation and we were isolated from the world. Totally. So, we missed the Industrial Revolution and everything else that came with it. And we've been trying to play catch up ever since.
And yet, I think it's fair to say that Haiti is a very fertile island, historically growing crops consumed by the world. But UNICEF reports 1 in 4 children in Haiti suffer from chronic malnutrition. Can you talk about the fertility of the island? Should agriculture be more of a domestic resource there and maybe even an export business more than it is?
Well, yeah, it should. In fact, President Préval in 2004 or so invested heavily in agriculture for Haiti. It was a couple of years before that, I'm sorry. And so what happened, and there was a hurricane, and it destroyed everything. And also, Haiti, it's cheaper to import rice and foodstuff than it is to grow it because of the lack of infrastructure, road to get things around. And so that's why we're food insecure. The other problem also is that the border with the Dominican Republic, where we get many of our goods, has been closed. And the ports are closed, so therefore not much can come in. Right now, people are living with whatever reserve that they have. I spoke to a friend of mine yesterday, and he was not sure how long his supplies would last in terms of food, and supermarkets are closed. So you have all of these factors playing a role in making the country at large food insecure. One of the things I must say, in fact, when we talk about Haiti, what's happening, and we want to be clear, Brian, that this most of what we're describing is Port-au-Prince. And the problem is that Port-au-Prince is the capital, and it's also the cultural capital and the most important city. And it's been isolated strategically, tactically by the gangs from the rest of the country. So there's nothing coming. There's nothing leaving Port-au-Prince. So Port-au-Prince is isolated completely and overrun by gangs.
When you say gangs, and so much of the media reporting uses that word, what do we mean by gangs? We think of gangs in one context in the New York area, maybe in other contexts nationally. It's different over time in the U.S. context. What do you mean when you say gangs?
These are criminal elements, thugs that have been growing, I would say, since the late 1990s. And they've been collecting and stockpiling military-grade weapons. And before, they used to be shock troopers, if you will, excuse the language, of the political class and the business elite. And the last couple years, they began to go out on their own, basically bypassing the political class and the business class, and started looting and killing and kidnapping for ransom, which has become very lucrative for them. And so these are not, you know, like you said, the gangs that we think of. Think of them more as the warlords. And the technicals of yesteryears in Somalia. So that's the situation we have. And then these gangs, criminal gangs, the police are unable to push them back. So the police have always been playing defense and not be able to attack them and pacify them and to make sure that the city, the capital city, can restore some sense of normalcy.
Why does the gang activity lead to a breakdown of the economy generally, though? If one thinks about mafia-type gangs, to use a phrase in the history of the United States, yeah, they took their cuts, but it didn't stop the economy from working overall.
Well, this is a different system, and Haiti's politics is a zero-sum game, and whatever we do, it's just like all for me, nothing for you. So, therefore, the gangs now, they have all the power. They used to be the army of the rich and the political class, if you will, but now they're their own army. They are no rules. They make the rules. They decide what happens. They've imposed taxes and other fines to people living in the neighborhoods throughout the city, and they're acting as a government, although obviously very illegal government. But essentially, they decide what happens. And you have to understand too, Brian, very important, that These gang members, they are marginalized. They've been marginalized all their lives. And these are people who are deeply, deeply angry at Haitian society, that the elite that ruled the country. And so right now, they're really, the notion of country and being a community, these things elude them. They've gotten, and really, that's why some people in the U.S., Haitians, I must say, that have a little bit of a sympathy for this situation, although they're not supportive, but they can understand why the situation has gotten to where it is. Mm-hmm. Because we've never seen, I mean, we've been talking about 25 years about Haiti on and off, Brian, but this is the worst it's ever been. This is real. The other things were manufactured by the political class, but this is a total breakdown of society, where people are fleeing. There's been images on the internet about helicopters coming in to whisk people out of the country. Well, that's not normal. This is not sort of like the political crisis that we've talked about, or the issues with the Dominican Republic, and then so on and so forth. This is, you know, next level chaos.
Gary and everybody, we're getting a call, it looks like, from inside Haiti. And so here is Maisalis calling from Haiti. Hello, Maisalis. Thank you for listening. You're on WNYC.
Thank you so much. My name is Rudel Maisalis. I'm a professor of political sciences, and I'm calling you from Haiti right now because I always like to listen to your show. I know you. I live in New York for a while, and after a while I'm in Haiti. And since you are talking about Haiti, it's a real pleasure for me to share my comments about the current situation in Haiti. That's why I'm calling you.
And I'm honored that you continue to listen to us, that you make that choice. Go ahead.
Yes. Yes. I think that there is something that is very important that is happening right now in Haiti. This is the strength, the energy of the Haitian people. As you know, there is no international communication. There is no planes, no boats. There is no port in the country. This is the people are selling food for Haitian elite who destroy the country. We have no supermarket. All markets are closed. Only we have informal trade in the country. This is I want your listeners to know that Haitian people is a strong people. Is very strong because they sustain the life of the country right now, because in the capital, as I told you, there is no market, there is no international plane, and then they sell the food. There is no relation, no communication with Dominican Republic. Generally, we import our food from Dominican Republic. This is the Haitian people that try to sustain the elite, the political elite, the economic elite that destroyed the country. And this current crisis is explained by the fact that the elite, the political elite, the economic elite destroy the country. They take away all the money. They leave the people alone. That's the reason why you can see in the popular areas, we have gang violence. They control the popular areas for that the political elite can win the election. There is an important connection between the gang violence and election in Haiti. The politician want to control the popular areas. That's why they distribute arms to gangs in the popular areas. This is a reality. And right now, it seems to me, they don't control these people who have gangs, who have arms in the popular areas. There is a disconnection between the gangs and some politicians that have armed them to do violence. But what I would like to tell you is the fact that right now, the country is isolated, and only the Haitian people, the peasant, the common people, sustain their life in Port-au-Prince with their food, with the informal trade. This is very important. This is mm-hmm. a people of resistance. This is very important for you. Because generally, historically, the Haitian elite, the political and economic elite, rob all the money. They take all the richness of the country. We have this violence because there is a gap of inequality in the country. Right now, the popular people react against the elite, and they also try to destroy the common people. But the real reason of the Haitian of the violence is the fact that there is a lack of distribution of social justice in the country. The way
you call, at least, let me ask you a follow-up question, and I certainly hear what you're saying about massive inequality and hoarding of resources by the elite being a root cause here.
Yes.
What, in your opinion, should the United States do, if anything? I know some people say U.S. intervention over time, even when well-intentioned, has often done more harm than good. But not everybody feels that way. What would you like to see the United States do?
Yeah, very good question. It is very difficult to answer this question because over the past, the U.S. intervention has been negative for the country. As you know, since 1915, there was the first U.S. intervention in the country, and after there has been many U.S. interventions. But right now, the people cannot sustain. It seems to me there's a large amount of the population that think that we need international intervention because the people cannot sustain. This is what they are. The society is divided into two blocks. A block, a minority that rejects the idea of international intervention. A majority requires this intervention because they think that we cannot sustain. The police, the national police can do nothing, and the army can do nothing. But what we should do in the next time is to have an army, a national army. You know, as you know, in 1994, the Haitian army has been destroyed. It was not reconstructed. But if we would like to help Haiti, first of all, I think that a large majority requires international intervention, an intervention, because they cannot do nothing. Police can do nothing. As you can see in TV, that gangs rob in banks, destroy, burn houses, burn banks, burn anything in the country. But there is a large majority that say that if you don't have this intervention, you can do nothing. But on the other side, I think that it would be a paracetamol answer. But we need the creation of the Haitian army in the future in order to issue to defend the country.
Right. Very interesting. And I'm going to leave it there and talk to Gary Pierre-Pierre about your call. Mes Alesse, I really, really appreciate you calling us from Haiti today with your perspective as a political science professor and as a human being. Thank you. Good luck to you and everyone you know there. Gary, such an interesting call. And at the end of it, well, you can jump in anywhere you want, but I was interested as one, you know, one point from his call at the end there when he talks about the need to recreate a Haitian army.
Well, yeah, that's a popular. Well, let me just give the listeners some context as to what the caller was talking about. When Aristide returned from to power in Haiti with the 20,000 American soldiers accompanying him, he disbanded the army because the army had just led the coup d'etat that ousted him. And so it created a police force. And so ever since then, there's been a discussion about that Haiti should restore its army. The argument against that is that it doesn't have the resources, and the army was really an instrument for the elite and the politicians to foment dissent in the country, right? Coup d'etat and whatnot. It sounds very familiar to today, right? Let's say the gangs and the army. So what happened is the police were very politicized. All the president, prime minister undermined the police force's power. And so it became sort of like toothless. And so one of the things that I want to follow up on what the caller said, which was really, you know, laying out the challenges for intervention or against intervention, I don't think it's a binary choice. I think what the United States can do and should do is really support the Haitian police, provide the police with the material, the intelligence apparatus, and everything else it needs to fight the gangs. I believe that they can fight the gangs, but they cannot do it by themselves. What will happen if that happens? You will go a long way to establish respect for the police in the eyes of the people of Haiti, and we'll be able to reconstruct the country. You know, with that. That's a good first step to empower the police and the justice system and all of that. I think this is something, you know, the U.S. can do right now.
So last question, do you need more buy-in from the American public generally? There's a lot of attention to other parts of the world that are in crisis. Obviously, there's, you know, a lot of American feeling of connection to the Israel-Gaza situation from various populations in this country and for various historical and religious and all kinds of reasons. Haiti, there is a big Haitian diaspora in the New York area, absolutely, in the Miami area, a little bit elsewhere. But I actually want to play a clip of Joe Biden from when he was in the Senate in 1994, during the crisis after Prime Minister Aristide had been deposed in a coup. This is from a PBS interview with Charlie Rose on PBS in 94. And he's not saying this is his own opinion, but this is how he's characterizing American attitudes or how much Americans care. Listen.
If Haiti, a god-awful thing to say, if Haiti just quietly sunk into the Caribbean or rose up 300 feet, it wouldn't matter a whole lot.
So if that is still the case, how do you get Americans to care enough, even while you're debating whether American intervention is helpful or harmful?
Well, I think the first American that needs to say something are the Haitian Americans. I think we have to do a job to mobilize our neighbors, friends, and acquaintances about Haiti. That's one of the reasons, Brian, why I left mainstream journalism, the New York Times, to do the Haitian Times. I wanted to provide us with a voice, at least a reason, that we could look at it, the situation, from an American point of view, as Haitian American, and to provide the Haitian diaspora a point of view about what, you know, what's happening in Haiti. And because we're the ones with everything to lose. You know, I was born in Haiti. I left Haiti. I was 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And Haiti is part of me. It will always remain. And my children are still connected to Haiti. And this is the continuation. And this is a calling, a challenge to my fellow Haitian Americans. You know, you cannot sit and do nothing. We need to organize because the country is in danger. And this time it's serious. And I've never said that. I could always have an explanation for why this situation is happening. This is society breaking down. So this is not, you know, something that you can come up with some sort of policy mm-hmm. that's going to fix it. We need to rebuild this nation. 1804 all over again.
Thank you, Gary, for illuminating our listeners about what's going on in Haiti. The Haitian Times publishes in New York, largely for the diaspora. And Gary Pierre Pierre is the editor and publisher. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.